Good evening, buenas noches a todos mi gente aquí en Washington, D.C. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, El Distrito de Colombia, here on this Wednesday, October 27th, 2010. This is Oscar Fernandez, along with Norberto Martinez. And for the hour this evening, we're going to focus on next week's upcoming elections here in Washington, D.C. So with that said, not only are we going to speak to our guests this evening, but we want to also want to open up the phone lines this evening to get your thoughts on what you think is important, the most important issues coming up on next week elections. With that said, the number for the station is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. We want to hear your thoughts. We want to open up the phone lines to hear what you think are the most important topics and issues coming up in next week's elections. So with that said, we have with us live in the studio Scott McLarty. He's the media coordinator for the D.C. Statehood Green Party. He joins us in the studio. And we also have Pete Tucker, independent journalist, a contributor to Spectrum Today, which you can also hear on WPFW. And he's also the lead, the run person in charge for the fightback.org, fightback.org website. Thank you, both of you, for being on the show with us. Norberto Martinez.
Good. Thank you, Oscar. Thanks for both Pete Tucker and also Scott McLarty for being here. We want to talk about some of the local elections that are happening. For instance, Gray, who has, to a degree, been elected to now being the front runner of the Democratic Party as the candidate for the city mayor. And then, you know, we have a list of other candidates from the Democratic to the, including the Statehood Green Party candidates. I believe there are five candidates running now. And so it's, to a degree, sort of a heated elections that we have in the district. So we want to see if you can tell us what are some of the issues that you think are the most or some of the most important issues that are some of these candidates are running on. And let me start with Scott, and then we can come with Pete.
Well, I think that one of the most important things to talk about is that in Washington, D.C., the past couple of mayoral administrations have been considered quite successful, but they're really only successful for certain levels of D.C.'s populations. And as one of our candidates, David Schwartzman, running for at-large member of City Council, has pointed out, the gap between the wealthy and the not so wealthy, D.C.'s working people and poorer people, has grown quite a bit, and we need to correct that. Most of the candidates, the Democrats and the few Republicans that are running, aren't talking about that, or they're not talking about it very much. But the D.C. Statehood Green Party has said that that's the missing element of in the public debate in this campaign period. Let's start talking about that right now. Let's talk about the needs of working people, the rights of D.C.'s parents and students, housing rights, health care, and certainly education.
And Pete, what are some of the issues that you have seen so far been covered?
Oh, thank you guys so much for the opportunity. A Washington Post article not too long ago said that 43% of African American children in Washington, D.C. are in poverty. And Scott's absolutely right. We have not seen issues regarding poverty discussed enough. AIDS is an epidemic in this city. I haven't heard this discussed very much this campaign season. And really, a lot of the campaign in the media ended September 14th with the Democratic primary, when it should have continued up until Tuesday. The Washington Post twice... Okay, the editorial endorsing, Scott mentioned David Schwartzman. He's running at large statehood Green Party ticket for the D.C. Council. The Washington Post endorsements mentioned his name, I think, for the first time, saying that he was token opposition and previously they had referred to him as token opposition without mentioning his name. Not a sentence about that he stands for a very different type of tax structure than his opponent, David Catania. And yet, we don't talk about these issues, and yet the Washington Post itself, page one a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, 43%, we're approaching one out of two black children in this city are in poverty. So I want to commend the Latino Media Collective for opening up these airwaves. I mean, the Washington Post has just not extended the election to November 2nd. It cut it off September 14th, which was problematic enough for the Washington Post because they backed to the hilt Adrian Fenty, endorsed him on a regular basis. And yet it was not Adrian Fenty who prevailed, but the D.C. Council Chairman, Vincent Gray, who tonight is finishing up a series of eight town halls for the eight wards. And I've been to a number of them, and it is inspiring. I'm not talking about Vincent Gray, although he's quite impressive, certainly as compared to the last mayor. I'm talking about the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who have turned out. It's really showing something very civic is stirring in this city. And, you know, the Washington Post, if it continues to do like it does, which will come after Gray and come after progressive politics, I think what is being shown is that people are really willing to kind of buffer that right-wingism and show that, no, we don't just want budget cuts. We really want a fair tax structure in this city. We want the people who are most hurt not to have services cut, but to do something much more progressive, because this is a much more progressive city than maybe the leading paper, which has endorsed several Republicans in D.C., is letting on. And one of the things, and I'll finish with this, Norberto, that Gray said, I believe each night that I've had a chance to be there for some time, is that he wants statehood for D.C. Not one vote, but statehood. And he's willing to get arrested. And Ward 80 said, look, I'm from the toughest parts of the city. Going to jail ain't nothing new to me. These are striking words coming from the person who is the presumptive mayor-elect of the city. And I think that, you know, we played these words on Spectrum today over the airwaves, and he said, I don't want to go up there and have look back over my shoulder and not be 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people. But I think what's shown throughout the city right now is that there are going to be large numbers of people who are really taking an interest in a lot of matters, including statehood. You know, this is not a state. The nation's capital is not a state. And among other issues, that certainly is primary, but there are many, and there are many, many people standing up and speaking out in really impressive ways.
As you mentioned, and as Norberto mentioned, that Mrs. Gray is sort of the presumptive, future mayor of D.C., you know, and you mentioned the issue of statehood and you know, his view on statehood. Apart from that, you know, what other things can make him starkly different from Adrian Fenty?
Well, I think that his town hall forums, last night, for example, Ward 4, I was late getting there, but Reverend Graylin Hagler stood up. And Reverend Hagler is a senior minister for Plymouth Congregation of the United Church of Christ. And he also helped start NACA, Neighborhood Assistance Corporation, with Bruce Marks in the 90s in Boston. And he said that there should be a moratorium on foreclosures in the District of Columbia. And Vincent Gray he said he wanted to look into that. So what makes potentially, there's nothing guaranteed, but potentially makes a Gray administration different than a Fenty administration is Gray has town halls where he listens, and he gives people a chance to speak. And when people speak, and they have, and like Reverend Hagler, and they put out platforms that certainly would not come from the top, but are coming from a grassroots perspective, that helps us to put pressure on him so he can kind of have the strength to, because the Washington Post is not going to come out in favor of that. The powers that be in D.C. are not going to be in favor of a moratorium on foreclosures, but the people are. And so these town halls have been one way to kind of put some people pressure and bring that into the executive office, which should have been the last 4 years, but clearly wasn't.
Let me ask you, Pete, I'm not sure exactly how different these town hall meetings are, but I know that the previous administrations had the same town hall meetings right after they were also elected. Would you say that, like, for instance, the Clinton administration and also the Williams administration did this, and even the Williams administration went on to have town hall meetings even during the time when he had already been in office on the second term? Would you say that the town hall meetings, do they mean a lot, or what do they really mean, Scott?
Well, I think it depends on how the town hall meetings are conducted. If they're organized in a way that to make sure that only the mayor's supporters will get to speak, that's one thing. I think the real test will come after Mr. Gray, the presumed mayor, is elected, and you know, will he defer to the very powerful real estate interests in Washington, D.C., or you know, the development interests, or will he really serve public education and the needs of the population here? That's the real question. And you know, there's an unspoken angle to this. There's something called the Federal City Council. And that's hardly ever discussed. It's never mentioned in the Washington Post because it's a rather secretive and elite business lobby, a business roundtable of the most powerful corporate interests in D.C. And the Federal City Council has a huge amount of control over the policies of the District of Columbia. And one thing that we saw with the Fenty administration was his willingness to hire basically what you can call agents of the Federal City Council to take control of the education system here. And a lot of what we saw in the attacks on the public schools, on the closing of the public schools, were motivated by real estate interests. What we really saw was a land grab, and Michelle Rhee was kind of a front man, if you will, for that.
I believe we have a caller. John, are you with us?
Yeah,
and that is John Judge. Tell us, John, I believe David Schwartzman is running for a city council seat in our city.
Yes, one of the two at-large seats that are open. And David's a member of D.C. Statehood Green Party here. I've been working in support of his campaign, and I think that he has a good program. When people find out about his program, they're very supportive. One of our themes is finish the job. The people who voted Fenty out and Gray in should understand, looking at his voting record, that Catania was basically an extension of the Fenty-Rhee group on the city council and voted in there. Direction with wrecking the schools and other things, and has basically voted for the corporations and the developers all along. Even has a job where he gets income from one of the subsidiaries of the corporation that contracts to the city. And you know, he's been going in a different direction. For those that don't know David Schwartzman, he's lived in D.C. for decades. Been in the Statehood Party for 34 years and spent 40 years teaching environmental science at Howard University and 50 years working for peace and social justice and civil and human rights. And he wants to make a real difference in D.C., open up the city council to the legitimate groups that are working for progressive change in D.C., and be a people's voice on the city council. And we do have a chance, I think, to get him into the seat. If we can combine D.C. Statehood Green votes with other progressive and independent votes and the Democrats that are clearly ready for a change here in D.C. In an election in 08, he got over 20,000 votes, and his main opponent is going to be David Catania. The first vote, we assume, will go to Melanson. Phil Melanson, or Mendelson, I'm sorry, who's a Democrat, and the second vote then comes down to basically Schwartzman and Catania, who's a Republican in independent clothing, and raised money for George Bush. So We feel that given that choice, and we've been putting that out at these town hall meetings and other community events ever since the primary, and it resonates for people, especially over where I live, Ward 7 and Ward 8 areas, but throughout the city, people are ready to do something different, and this would be, you know, a better voice on the city council. David is trying to address what he calls the crisis of everyday living that faces the majority of people that live here in D.C., with education and poverty and housing and environment, health and transportation, tax revenue, and our lack of independence. And he's very concerned about the mayoral control of the schools and the forcing of privatization and the layoff of the teachers. Severe child poverty is one of his main issues because it condemns youth to poor education, unskilled jobs, and poor health. And he's concerned that millions of dollars are given out in contracts without getting new jobs for people who live here. And they take city funds away from needed programs, these big corporations, so that we need to feed and educate our youth. And our youth are facing imprisonment for minor crimes and a drug war, and facing discrimination in hiring instead of getting the training and rehabilitation they need. People who want to be homeowners are being forced out of D.C. by prices that are based on higher average incomes than is proper for D.C. residents, based on the whole area as the median. And the loans and support that were available for first-time home buyers and renters are gone now and been cut out of the city budget and cut back. And loans for community development-based projects or green projects aren't going to people here in D.C. They're going to these developers from outside. So David wants to make that process
John, let me ask you for a website and a phone number for people who can get in touch with you or with the campaign.
Sure. David Schwartzman, SCHWARTZMAN.com is the campaign site. And the phone here in D.C. is 321-5395. And we're hoping to open the city council up to start addressing the real issues that people face here in D.C.
Okay.
David also wants to form a municipal bank in D.C. that would leverage loans for green development and for low-income housing and other projects. And he wants to tax the very wealthy, the top 5% millionaires here, more money to take the burden off of the poor and working families and to raise our revenue here in the city to work with. So he's got a completely different program than Catania or most of the people that have been on the city council, a people's program and a progressive program, and he you know, he wants to make a real change and be a people's voice.
Okay, thank you, John. And for other listeners who wanted participate in the conversation, the number to call is 202-588-0893.
Scott Malarkey, you want to respond to something he said?
Well, I wanted to add a little bit. John mentioned David Schwartzman's website, which is davidschwartzman.com. But I invite people to go visit the website of the D.C. Statehood Green Party, which is dcstatehoodgreen.org. And there's a list of candidates, the Statehood Green candidates, and their websites there. And get to know what we stand for. We're not getting covered by the Washington Post, and of course we're very, very grateful to WPFW and Latino Media Collective for having us on. We've dealt with this kind of stuff from the Washington Post for years now. Once we even held a press conference in front of their front door in order to get them to notice us.
Did they cover it?
They mentioned us. They mentioned us the next day. I can give you some specific reasons why that make me suspicious of why the Washington, very specific reasons why the Washington Post doesn't cover us in a little bit. If you want me to, but please, if you're tired of so many candidates in the Democratic and Republican and certainly the in David Catania's case, independent parties who basically work to make the rich people richer, and you're looking for an alternative, please consider the D.C. Statehood Green Party and its candidates. We don't take any money from corporations. That's one stipulation. That's one difference that sets us apart from the two corporate parties, Democrats and Republicans.
Pete Tucker, you want to add something as well?
Yeah. First, I just want to say I'm not endorsing any candidate, including David Schwartzman, as a journalist. That's not my job. But I have reported on, and I wish other journalists would report on, David Catania's second salary. He makes $120,000 a year, according to the latest Office of Campaign Finance reports, on top of his council salary of $125,000 a year. And that's from a subsidiary of MC Dean. MC Dean, which, if I'm remembering correctly, has done $130 million in business over the past roughly 10 years, according to the Washington Post. And then you look at the Washington Post going after Marion Barry just vehemently, viciously, for weeks on end about a year ago, going after Harry Thomas now, endorsed the Republican in Ward 5 over Councilmember Harry Thomas. And you look at the numbers. Well, Catania, just go to the Office of Campaign Finance, $120,000 a year, second salary, from a company that is a subsidiary of a company that has done, they do all the stoplights. Big, big, big contract. Some $130 million in contracts. And so I want to put that out. I'm not endorsing her. But these issues should be discussed. And they're not discussed. You look at the Post going after Thomas, but you don't see the mention. You can't get a mention, including other publications, too, that Catania has a second salary. There's no mention of Jack Evans' second salary. He might be the third most powerful elected official in this city, chair of the Finance and Revenue Committee. On top of his $125,000 council salary, he's pulling in an additional $240,000 a year on the payroll of Patton Boggs, the largest lobby law firm in the country. And so we aren't talking about important things. And then what happens? Well, deals like the very deal that is going to, if it goes through, level this building to build a luxury boutique hotel, which just went through Evans' Finance and Revenue Committee. And this luxury boutique hotel will be operated by Marriott. And Mr. Evans has refused repeatedly to say if Marriott is a client of his firm, Patton Boggs's. So these are the issues that should be discussed. These are the, like we're discussing tonight on Latino Media Collective, and that have been left out of the election discussion or the lack thereof.
I believe we have a caller on the line. Caller, can you hear us?
Yes.
Do you have a short question or comment for this evening?
Yes, I do. I mean, I would heartily support David Schwartzman being elected to the city council. I think it would create openings. I do want to ask the Green Party representative or representatives that are there, though I have noticed in campaigns in the past that there tends to be kind of a general statement about affordable housing or about improving housing. It's a little bit abstract, and I never hear the kind of critical, the positions that really address the crisis, which would be things like a freeze. And definitely I'm not hearing anything about rollbacks on rents. And I would think that in light of the fact that all of the other social justice programs will mean nothing if people are essentially in a state of stress having to move out of the city. I mean, they won't be here physically, and their minds will be elsewhere if they're not housed here. I would think that that would almost be the most central issue, as it has become apparently with at least one group in New York. And I just wondered why there is the little bit too much abstraction on that issue. But again, I do think David's way out there as a better candidate. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Scott Malarkey, your response.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with you. I think we've been quite specific in the ways that the city has betrayed a lot of the people who really need housing. And we've had many of our members, many of our activists involved in housing and housing justice and housing justice movements. We were very critical of the takeover of the Arthur Kapper housing, public housing project. We called that part of a general attack on public housing and public property that has been going on for the interests of real estate. We take a strong stand in favor of rent control. Most of us ourselves are renters. And I would invite you to read about the party's actual positions and our activities. Jane Zara, for instance, one of the steering committee members of the D.C. Statehood Green Party, has been, she's a lawyer herself, has been quite active in housing rights. In Ward 7, Rick Tingling Clemens, who is running for D.C. delegate, which is Eleanor Holmes Norton's seat, is a longtime activist for the rights of residents.
We are speaking with Scott McLarty, the media coordinator for the D.C. Statehood Green Party, and Pete Tucker, contributor to Spectrum Today here on WPFW, and the head of the fightback.org website. Yes.
And the one final thing I want to mention is that we have been very, very strong supporters of Empower D.C., and a lot of the activism that takes place in the D.C. State of Green Party is really connected with Empower D.C. We have a very strong relationship and support of Empower D.C., and I invite listeners to learn. If you don't know about Empower D.C., it's probably the one of the two or three best citizens organizations here in the District of Columbia.
Thank you very much once again, Scott. And we want to remind everyone that if you have a question or a comment for this evening, give us a call back at 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. This is Latino Media Collective. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned.
showing us your unconditional love. Your pledge is the power behind our public radio station. We appreciate the 4,742 new and renewing supporters that made our fall membership drive a success. If you made a pledge but haven't mailed in your check yet, we wish to put those funds to work right away so that we may keep bringing you great music news and information. If you were intending to pledge but didn't quite get around to it, you can pledge online anytime at WPFW.org. And remember, you can tip your favorite program. Thanks again for showing WPFW your unconditional love.
This is Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, reminding everyone that you can also listen to us live online at WPFW.org. That's WPFW.org. Or you go to DC.inimedia.org to catch any of our previous shows. Again, that's DC.inimedia.org. And again, we're dealing with local politics, so if you have any, you know, any comments that you want to bring up as to what you think is important for next week's election, the number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. Again, we're speaking with Scott McLarty, the media coordinator for the D.C. Statehood Green Party, and Pete Tucker, who's a contributor for Spectrum Today, which is on WPFW before us, and the fightback.org website. So, obviously, you know, one of the biggest issues, you know, before the Democratic primary here in D.C. was the issue of education. And it's gotten to the point where education, particularly in D.C., became a national issue. And, you know, obviously the public figure, the public face for that was Michelle Rhee, and note the point was the main focal point in this. And, you know, it's probably one of the main reasons why, you know, Vincent Gray won the Democratic primary as a result. So I want to get your thoughts to both of you this evening, your thoughts of education, of what may happen, what you think should happen after everything that did happen in the Fenty administration. And I'll start with Scott McLarty.
Well, contrary to the Washington Post's point of view and the and some other commentators, that the that D.C. parents made a big mistake and betrayed education by booting out Fenty, I think that D.C. parents knew exactly what they were doing, and they really resented the autocratic educational regime of Education Chancellor Michelle Rhee. Now, one of the things about that people should understand about the charter school movement is that it has always been a backdoor to privatization of public education. And privatization has never been good for education, and even charter schools have never proven to be statistically better than public schools. People should know that. And, the way Ms. Rhee treated parents was unconscionable. There is something that – there's an angle to this that listeners should know, I think, and that is that the Washington Post has its own – financial interest in the privatization of public education, because the Washington Post owns Kaplan, which is a private educational service. And, they're not going to talk about that for the same reason they don't talk about the Federal City Council, because the Washington Post was the family that owns the Washington Post, the Grahams, founded the Federal City Council. So these things are kept off the pages of the Washington Post, and because the D.C. State of Green Party and our candidates often talk about these things, I think that's why the Post prefers to ignore us most of the time, and that's why we encourage parents in particular, parents of students in the public school system, to learn about our candidates and about what we stand for. There is a very good chance now that we can see things turn around, that the so-called waiting for Superman block of Fenty, Rhee, and Catania will be banished from D.C. government, and we can get back to the real business of public education and good schools.
Pete Tucker, I want to get your thoughts in a second, but before we do, we have another caller on the line. Caller, can you hear us?
Yes, please. Good evening, gentlemen.
Yes, do you have a short question or comment for this evening?
Comment. It's only proper that you followed the last program with this topic. I mean the last segment of that program. If one is not better informed than that segment, then one might not remember or realize that a black man is the sitting president of the United States. And it is the so-called and maligned Generation X that almost single-handedly made it possible. To me, they are generation change. The point is that majority of Americans are progressives and don't want to move backwards instead of and want to move forwards instead of backwards, as a very insignificant, tiny, and fascist Green Party wants. As you guys have just said, and Amy Goodman dwelt on it a lot this morning, why the mass media is giving the Tea Party all the press in this world. They don't even mention the third parties and other liberal voices. But Askia and his psychologists are swallowing the crap that goes for polls and news in the United States, which is fooling itself that the Republicans are going to sweep the polls next week. It is just psyops on the citizenry in favor of the fascist Republicans. That's all it is. They are not going to... People, you know, majority of Americans, the silent majority, I mean, overwhelming silent majority, are not in the Green Party. Green Party, to me, is very insignificant. Without the right-wing mass media, nobody will even hear about them. Please, don't give them any more praise, especially on WPOW or Pacifica. Please, thank you so much. Have a blessed evening.
We are covering them just to say something on that. We are speaking of local elections. I mean, the Green Party doesn't have the huge numbers of the Democratic and the Republican parties nationwide, but locally, I think is the focus of our show right now. What would you say in regards to what the caller just said?
Well, a couple of things to point out. First of all, we're quite proud of the D.C. Statehood Green Party. We are part of the Green Party of the United States. You can look that up at gp.org. We have proportionally the largest Green Party, except for Maine. Maine has 3% of its registered voters registered in the Green Party. Actually, it's the Maine Independent Green Party. The D.C. Statehood Green Party has a little bit less than that, but we're doing better than all of our other Green Parties in many ways here in D.C., and we're very proud of the fact that we represent a merger of the D.C. Statehood and the D.C. Green Parties back in 1999, and the D.C. Statehood Party comes out of the Civil Rights Movement, goes back to 1970. But in addition to that, I would like to point out that in Washington, D.C., in the past few elections, D.C. Statehood Green candidates have received more votes collectively than Republicans on the ballot. And so in terms of elections, not in terms of registrations, where the Republicans do have more registrants, in terms of elections, the D.C. Statehood Green Party is D.C.'s second party.
Getting back to the issue on education, I want to get Pete Tucker back in on the conversation here. You know, again, the question remains, you know, what is the state of education going now, and what changes can be made, you know, in contrast to what happened during the Fenty administration?
Thanks, Oscar. Before I say that, there's two things on voting that I should have gotten in earlier, which I just wanted to point out.
Yes.
One is that early voting is available for folks. There are five outlets where people can do that up through Saturday. I think it's like 8:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. In D.C., and I know that in Montgomery County, I imagine it's throughout Maryland, but certainly Montgomery County has early voting as well. And in D.C., it's not just, we didn't mention it, A&C commissioners, advisory neighborhood commissioners, mm-hmm. who are in D.C. the most local, the most grassroots elected position. And I also wanted to point out that on the ballot in D.C. is whether or not in the year 2014, which is just around the corner, right after Gray's term, whether that will be an elected attorney general. That is on the ballot right now. So if you early vote, it'll be on as soon as you vote, or it'll be November 2nd if you go on Tuesday. And that is, right now, the attorney general in Washington, D.C., is appointed by the mayor, and some feel that that does not leave enough space for an independent attorney general. Many feel that Peter Nichols has been too much the mayor's lawyer as opposed to the lawyer for the people of the District of Columbia.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And now with regard to schools, unfortunately, I think it was this morning's Washington Post, there was an article which pointed out that Gray sat down with some of the funders who have funded this teacher's contract, the impact evaluation, which is very unpopular. And you mentioned, Norberto, about how different Gray might be, at least how different the town halls are. I don't know how different these town halls are or than previous town halls, but it is problematic that, that Gray is sitting down with the same donors who have loved Michelle Rhee and who have implemented these policies, which, as you pointed out, Oscar, are a central reason why Fenty is not serving a second term. And Scott mentioned about the Washington Post having an interest in education, and we reported on that. And if folks want to read pretty extensively about it, thefightback.org. That is correct. The Washington Post owns Kaplan, and Kaplan brought in a 2009 revenue of $2.6 billion. And Kaplan is currently under federal investigation because of they run for-profit colleges, which is this is one of the great scams which has not been covered, not shockingly, covered accurately, covered you know, thoroughly in the Washington Post, but hasn't really been covered elsewhere, which is the student debt that people are in is really outrageous. It's like the foreclosure, the mortgage scandals. And at the forefront is the for-profit colleges like Kaplan, where only 28% of students are able to pay down the principal. And so every article that an editorial of the Washington Post writes, I think there should be a disclaimer that this is, in the words of Don Graham, the publisher, a quote-unquote education and media company. But that hasn't been the case, and so we haven't had a fair debate on this issue throughout the city. But I do think the election is a very as clear a statement about how D.C. feels about this so-called school reform as any statement has been made.
I believe we have another caller on the line, Pete. Caller, can you hear us?
Hello?
Yes, can you hear us?
Yes.
Do you have a short question or comment for this evening?
Just a very short comment. Well, first, congratulations to the Green Party in D.C. I think that little by little changes will be coming through, and I commend on the grassroots work.
Thank you.
The other thing is, I believe that the previous caller have mixed up the Green Party with the Tea Party. In the middle of his comment, he said Tea Party, and then he's saying Green Party. Just think that it's a matter of educating, and it was a good thing that you're clarifying what you were all about. Thank you so much.
Well, I understood that the that at a couple of points the previous caller said Tea Party or said Green Party when he mentioned Tea Party, so I didn't take that any further. But, you know, of course, there's a huge difference between the Green Party and the Tea Party, and we believe that the Green Party represents the real vehicle for change in a direction of U.S. politics. If we can get some Greens elected to Congress, it'll change the whole face. It'll change the whole landscape of U.S. politics because Democrats and Republicans won't be each other's sole competition anymore. We'll have somebody in public office at the national level, people who do not take money from these very powerful oil companies, insurance companies, defense manufacturers, et cetera, that have been that have basically taken over or public policy in the United States.
Let me ask you something in regards to some of the endorsements coming from the Latino side of endorsements of many of the candidates in the city. What I've seen and what I've noticed is, for instance, that the some of the Latino nonprofits stepping in to endorse some of the candidates in running in city elections. Like, for instance, Jim Graham during the primaries was endorsed by Maria Gomez, who's the director, CEO of Mary Center, and also Sonia Gutierrez, Carlos, she's the director of the Carlos Rosario Public Charter School, which is on 11th Street in Harvard, and then the director of Mi Casa, Inc., which is Mr. Lemus, he's the executive director of that, and Beatriz Vivioteros, the director of Centronia, and Jaime Contreras, one of the leaders of the SEIU. Thus, you saw that clearly with the endorsement of those people.
Sure.
You know, where the leanings of the Democratic Party are in that sense. And then And then you have now Catania. Catania did a massive mailing of Maria Gomez endorsing him for this upcoming elections.
Well, in some of those cases, I think they may have made a mistake if they really if they're really concerned about the constituents of these organizations. But I'm not going to criticize that right now. I know that the Democratic Party is so powerful in the U.S. in the District of Columbia that a lot of the organizations feel compelled to endorse a lot of the Democrats or other establishment candidates such as David Catania, even though they know that their performance is sometimes quite lacking. I do invite these organizations to learn about the D.C. Statehood Green Party. We are quite different from the Democrats and Republicans, and Mr. Catania is an independent. And, for instance, the D.C. Statehood Green Party, as part of the Green Party of the United States, we allow people who are immigrants, who are not registered to vote, who are undocumented, to be members of our party, to participate in the party, and as equals with voting rights within the party. We are in favor of, let me put it this way. We believe that human rights come first. We feel that undocumented immigrants should be treated fairly based on the concept of human rights. And we believe in a general amnesty for all undocumented immigrants as well. And that's quite different from the Democrats and Republicans, who have often rushed to judgment and condemnation of people who come across the borders.
We have another caller in the line. Caller, can you hear us?
Yeah, is that me?
Yeah, we're running short on time. Do you have a short question or comment?
Yes, a real quick question. I just have, if you could share some information, if possible, about the Green Party here in Maryland. I've been looking at the lady from Baltimore who's running for governor, but to be quite honest, I've not been very impressed with her. I just wanted to see, can share information on her. And also, quick question in D.C., is Faith still the mayoral candidate in the Green Party, just those two?
Yes, that's correct. Faith has ran for the D.C. Statehood Green Party's nomination for mayor, and she was unopposed, so she did win that nomination. I can't really speak in depth about Maria Allwine, who is running for governor of Maryland, but I do encourage people to learn about her campaign. I don't know right offhand the website of the Maryland Green Party. I recommend that you go to gp.org. That's the site for the National Green Party. Click on states in the left-hand menu. Click on Maryland, and you'll get lots of information. Or call our national office, which is 202-319-0071, and we can talk about the Maryland Green Party there, and you can learn about us.
Pete, any comments on or predictions on issues and candidates?
I just want to mention that earlier today I came from a conference on of immigration organizers in Arlington in Northern Virginia. And also I had the thought that I looked at some of the Montgomery County numbers, and it was one of the lowest turnouts ever. And so I just want to emphasize the importance of people getting out to the polls, because, you know, this conference, it really matters who the state legislators are throughout the entire state of Virginia, and that's, you know, an important state when it comes to secure communities in D.C., so-called secure communities in D.C. We stopped that. That is when you have the police acting like immigration officers. And so if this turnout stays very low, and if it's particularly low among minorities and people feel disenfranchised and we don't turn out, well, then the government can go further right. And so I think it's important that I know that there's imperfections with voting. I'm not saying it's the only thing we should do civically on Tuesday every other day. But if we don't turn out the polls and it's not representative of who we are, then it will have ramifications going forward.
And Scott, any predictions in our local elections?
Well, I would like to predict a D.C. statehood green sweep next Tuesday. Now, maybe that's not going to happen, but it's nice to think about. I do strongly recommend that listeners learn about statehood Green Party candidates. There's a habit of a lot of voters here in Washington, D.C., of voting the straight Democratic Party line, and that has given us some very regrettable public officials in the past, and it has given kind of a blank check to maybe to many of the Democrats to just take over and do what they want. Unfortunately, because this is, well, it's a town dominated by a single party, the Democratic Party plays the role very often of both Democrat and Republican, and they've often adopted many Republican kinds of policies, and I think certainly the education policy and the attacks on public schools and public school teachers has been an example of that.
The former head of OSSE just went to run the George W. Bush Library Foundation, whatever, in Texas. Kerry Briggs, example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Pete, I want to give you the last word. Can you remind everyone once again, you know, early voting and where people can go to vote early?
Yeah, there's 5 early voting centers, certainly 1 Judiciary Square, 5 in D.C., Turkey Thicket, Chevy Chase, I'm forgetting the other 2. I have a couple other points. One is we're talking about education. Mm-hmm. I think today is the last day for the Washington Teachers Union election. Now, that people can't vote in unless you're a member of that union, the WTU. But that will certainly be an interesting election because a lot of folks feel that George Parker, the current president, who postponed this election, worked too closely with the outgoing school's chancellor, Michelle Rhee, on these impact evaluation, this controversial teacher's contract, which used Walton Foundation, Walmart money. And so that is an election which district residents can't vote in, except for the teachers, but certainly will have an impact going forward. And then last election, September 14th, I traveled around the city to polling places, and the voting machines had major problems, the electronic, the touchscreen voting machines. And that's something to pay attention to, too. I think, I don't think it would be, well, it's just something to pay attention to, and it hasn't been reported on adequately. And while it's a problem in the district, it's really a problem throughout the country. When you recently there was a hearing of the board of Mary Che, chair of the Committee on Government Operations and the Environment for the D.C. Council, about internet voting, and the folks hacked into D.C.'s internet voting within 36 hours, and they were watching from the security cameras in their offices in Michigan, Alex Halderman. He was watching D.C., and he was playing with the votes. So internet voting is a terrible idea. Paper ballot seems to be the safest mm-hmm. way to go, and these are just things ongoing, not necessarily just for Tuesday. And lastly, there are also school board elections coming up. We're talking about education, so folks can pay attention to those as well.
We've been speaking with Pete Tucker, independent journalist and contributor for Spectrum Today. You can find more of his previous work at thefightback.org. That's thefightback.org. And we were also speaking with Scott McLarty, media coordinator for the Green Party, D.C. Statehood Green Party. You can go to gp.org. That's gp.org. And with that said, that is it for today's show. One correction we want to make before we leave. One of the callers called us and mentioned the Tea Party, not the Green Party. He was speaking, about the Tea Party. So we want to make that correction and say thank you very much for that caller. We appreciate your phone call as well. This show is produced by Norberto Martinez, Michelle Christmas, Janet Hernandez, Angel 22, engineered by Abigail Roberts. I am Oscar Fernandez, and stay tuned now for Evening Jazz with Miss Ellen Carr. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. That is it for tonight's show. Adios. Nos vemos. Ciao.